This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The term conspiracy theory has come to mean in common parlance that something is a fishy idea, not a fishy conduct, but in fact that the person offering the idea is being fishy. What conspiracy means is actually just an agreement, a plan, among people they don't share with a lot of other people, that is, roughly speaking, in secret. That happens all the time. It happens every day. And I don't say that because I think that there's weird stuff being done to make it rain when otherwise it wouldn't rain. I mean that in you do that a lot. In a surprise party that you plan, in something that you're going to do at your job to release a new product or to let go a team member. Agreements happen all the time without other people knowing them. And in fact, in the halls of power, they happen also all the time. And very often they have consequence. And theorizing about them, rather than being poo-pooed, should be analyzed like any other hypothesis, based on facts, analyzed and evaluated for whether one story seems more plausible and lines up with the facts better than some other story, some other conspiracy theory. Because it's always a conspiracy theory, unless you believe that everything everyone says is always transparent, and we know that that is absurd. Jonathan Chait just wrote an article. He might have been working on it for a while. It's been making the rounds of the internet. We are honored to have him here. And in it, he says, what if it's worse than you think? What if what Glenn Greenwald has called pathological, the concern about Russian interference with this White House, with this president, with this government, and with these recent elections, what if it's as bad as you can imagine and worse than you think? What if there's a 20% chance of that, a 10% chance of that? What might that story look like, and why would it matter? Jonathan Chait joins us now. This is our moment for conspiracy theory, and by that I mean hypothesizing about what people might have done without telling everybody else what they were doing. Jonathan, hello. Jonathan, talk to us about the article. What prompted you to write it?
Well, I've been following this story from the beginning. In 2016, the summer of 2016, not many people took seriously the notion that Russia was doing anything untoward with relation to Trump or the election. The notion that they were interfering in the election at all was pretty far out, and nobody took it seriously. In fact, the initial reports about the hacking of the DNC just assumed that Russia was just trying to get more information and was not trying to help anybody in the election. So as we've learned more, people have grown more and more accepting of the idea that Russia was helping Trump, and even that Trump was welcoming that help to some level. But I think there's a chance that it just goes even deeper than we think, or at least we don't know how far it goes. And there's been an assumption that we do know, that is an assumption that at every stage that it's only going a little bit further than we think, and we keep getting surprised. So I want to try to responsibly game out in this article what it would look like if it goes farther by assembling, all the facts and being reasonable about it and not saying, well, this can only be explained by that. And if we know that, then therefore that, and therefore another thing. That's how you do a conspiracy theory that goes awry. And there are a lot of conspiracy theories that make those kinds of errors. So I'm just trying to use trustworthy, publicly verified sources and just put it together. Like, what do we think? What are the probabilities? What are the possibilities? And how deep could it go? So that's what I tried to do.
And by how deep it could go, you include the, and focus on, I guess, the relationship. And you say, what if the next summit. I think that it was what are the next summit between Trump and Putin is not merely a discussion among foreign leaders or national leaders, but what if it is in fact a source meeting with his handler, Putin being the handler. And you say that there is a chance, and I know it is hard. I mean, the challenge with the big lie, the challenge of the big deceit is it's so hard to believe that that the good news isn't true because it disrupts our cognitive dissonance so very much. And I think that's why your story is important. New York Magazine is what it's in. I sometimes get it confused with the New Yorker. Correct me if I'm wrong. Although I've lived in New York, I don't see the world through the spoon of Manhattan.
Okay.
And you make the case, or at least hypothesize.
Yes, it is New York Magazine. You're right. That it is New York and not the New Yorker.
Thank you very much. And you make the case that, or at least put out the hypothesis, that the relationship between Russia and Trump, that Putin and Trump, it might not have, not only may not have been accidental, it may have been, or it may not have been recent. And in fact, it may have started in 1987. Make that case.
Well, this is just an odd coincidence that hasn't gotten enough attention. It's probably just an odd coincidence, which is that people always say, well, Donald Trump has believed this stuff about America's allies for forever, but he hasn't really believed forever. And what you're seeing, you know, with him attacking NATO is not what he's believed forever. He's only believed it since 1987. And in 1987, he went to Moscow after having been sort of courted and flattered a little bit by some Russian officials in New York. He went and visited Moscow. Luke Harding, a Guardian journalist, has a really good book that gets into this in more detail. So he goes to Moscow, talks about building something in Moscow for the first time, which didn't happen, has this great meeting with the Soviets, and then comes back and within 2 months is talking about running for president for the first time and is paying more than $100,000 of his own money to pay full-page ads, attacking America's allies for the first time. And it's a familiar message now saying, why are we protecting them? Why are we spending our money to protect them? And of course, what he didn't say in there is that we are protecting them from Russia and the Soviets. And this did align very closely with Soviet foreign policy goals and Russian foreign policy goals to this day of splitting the U.S. away from its allies. So, again, probably a coincidence, but, you know.
Do you say probably a coincidence to maintain journalistic integrity and not to sound too beyond the current state of the conversation? Or do you say probably because you actually think it's probably because, I don't know, it being a coincidence doesn't necessarily seem any more or less likely than it not being a coincidence.
You know, if I had to bet my own money, I would probably say it's a coincidence. But I don't know. I mean, I just don't. But you're right to put some pressure on that. I mean, I can't assess the odds. It's really, really hard to say. You're right. I mean, I said, what if it's 10 or 20%? But that's kind of throwing the figure out there. I really don't know. It would not be beyond Soviet intelligence to put a bug in someone's ears to encourage them to take up these themes, to say, because they did like to identify people who have a future and future leaders and try to gain different kinds of influence over them, sometimes with blackmail, sometimes with bribes, sometimes with other forms of influence. Or maybe, you know, it could have just been something as simple as flattering him and playing to his ego and saying, like, America really needs a leader who's going to say this and that. You know, it's a big hole out there that you could fill. That could easily be the case.
Because to me, when I look at the facts as they stack up, and I'll offer a few facts, and I ask you that pile on. But we can also try to tear it down. But let's try to pile on some facts. So Donald Trump comes and starts making pronouncements about foreign policy that are in alignment with the desires of the Russian state, that relate to the United States weakening its alliances with its key allies and making those, as he is going now, similarly to how he's going now, to criticize NATO, to criticize Canada, to praise the separation forces that want to separate coalition power, and that he started doing that 2 months after visiting Russia. And then now you have very clear that there were, in fact, Russian bots that every intelligence agency were saying were trying to elect Donald Trump. And you have, I don't know, a dozen people, three people, somewhere between at least a half a dozen people with Russian ties, some degree of Russian ties, who were appointed to his administration. That his campaign manager was an operative for it. Remind people of the Manafort connection, because not, oh, Manafort, Trump, Russia, blah, and then maybe we forget. Because at some point we start piling this stuff up, and coincidence feels like much less likely than not coincidence. But remind people of Manafort and other key details you think people might be forgetting.
Well, sure. Let me pull out even more, because to say that Russia is interfering in an election and building, forging covert ties with the party here sounds much less crazy if you understand that they have done this time and time and time again. There's no controversy over this. They've done this in more than half a dozen elections in Europe, building ties with right-wing parties that they see as having some kind of common ideological goal, and often courting the leaders of those parties with bribes. In one of the clearest cases is an election in Ukraine, where Russia had a strong interest, and they backed a pro-Russian party and backed his political interests. And the person who ran this campaign is Paul Manafort. So Paul Manafort is running a pro-Russian political operation in Ukraine immediately before he comes to run Donald Trump's campaign.
So not only do they have a tradition, a habit of getting involved in other elections, but they get and implanting the person that they want, but they have used Paul Manafort to do that very thing. And then Paul Manafort, by maybe not coincidence, ends up being working for the Trump administration. We're about to go
right,
to break.
Same guy. Well, no, he's not in the administration. No, he was never
in that administration. Excuse me, the campaign.
Yeah.
The campaign. So the plug the article. Where can people check it out? What's your Twitter feed? Mine's Jefferson D. Smith, and I have posted it. What's yours? Where can people check it out?
My Twitter feed is at Jonathan Chait, Jonathan with an A-N-C-H-A-I-T, and nymag.com.
All right. Hang with us, listeners. We're going to be back with Jonathan Chait. We're going to be back with your phone calls. I'm Jefferson Smith. Fun stuff, except scary. And we've got to stay together to be less scared. This is Tom Hartman Show.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, and there's a lot going on. I'm Jeff. Jonathan Chait is with us. His article in New York Magazine, hypothesizing of what if it's worse than we think? What if the relationship between Donald Trump and Putin is that between a subject and his handler? So you have the Manafort campaign link. What other facts that you think people miss as we're choosing between these ideas of it's just a grand coincidence or, in fact, it is a grand conspiracy?
So, first of all, let me just back up and say that by handler, I don't think people should think that Trump is a Manchurian candidate, that he's, you know, speaking privately in Russian with Putin, is operating under direct control. Russian intelligence influences people at lots of different levels, and it could be something as simple as flattery. There could well be blackmail or financial leverage, because now to get into your question, there's clearly been a lot of Russian money. Both of Trump's sons admitted that they have been gotten a lot of money from Russia, and this started happening after traditional banks would no longer lend money to Donald Trump because he stiffs his creditors. He doesn't pay them back. So he gets a big infusion of Russian funds. We don't know the whole map of this because he doesn't release his tax returns. But that's a pretty big source of leverage. And you need to understand that Russia doesn't invest solely to maximize its returns. Russia invests money with political goals in mind. And the Russian economy is like this hybrid of state control and free market, where you've got these state-linked oligarchs who control everything. And so they like to dangle these kind of can't-lose deals before people so you can basically hide a bribe underneath the cover of a legitimate business transaction.
Yeah, and they have, and amplifying that, many Russian oligarchs got their dough because of relationships with the Russian state and Russian intelligence, and not only because if they violated the desires of the Russian state, they would have had it, but also even more often, more closely than that. What else do you think people are missing?
You know, I make a great deal out of the things that John Brennan, the former CIA head, has said publicly. I put that pretty high in my piece. I think it got far too little attention. So first of all, Brennan was briefed by European intelligence agencies who recorded conversations of Russian officials talking about the Trump campaign and their ties to the Trump campaign. So the Europeans hear the Russians talking about the Trump campaign and somehow in some level of involvement. They go to Washington and brief John Brennan, the CIA director, about these conversations. John Brennan has not said what he heard. Those recordings have not come out. But Brennan has said, first of all, basically that Trump or someone with him is committing treason. He's talking about how, you know, people go down the treasonous path and they realize it too late that they're on the treasonous path. And he said that he thinks Putin has influence over Donald Trump. He has some kind of blackmail, something over his head. So to relate to what you're saying before about a conspiracy theory, one of the ironies here is that conspiracy theories often say that the government is hiding something from us. And the organ of government that's the most frequent target of conspiracy theories is the CIA. But here, the actual head of the CIA is the one who's promoting this theory.
He's the one. You have the CIA saying, yeah, there is, in fact, in this case, a conspiracy. Jonathan Shay, New York Magazine, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your article.
All right. Thanks for having me.
This is Tom Hartman Show. We'll be back. We're back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith, sitting in for Tom. Honored to do it, and thank you for being so kind to me and being part of this community that is hopefully going to work long-term to reestablish democracy. We have been talking about the Supreme Court. We've been talking about Trump's visit to NATO. We've been talking about Jonathan Chait's article about what if the Trump relationship with Russia is even worse than we think. I want to take Maurice's call. Maurice from East Dublin, Georgia, who wants to posit that Democrats do the same as Republicans. Maurice, hello, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. Good to hear your voice. Speak your piece.
Well, everything that the Republicans have been doing and really what they've been doing since not only McConnell stole the Supreme Court seat, which is what he did, let's call a spade, but going back to Reagan, it all gives justification for the Democrats doing the same and in turn even more come 2021. They have to pack the courts, and I'm starting the hashtag, bye-bye, of hashtag pack the courts, and my vision is on Inauguration Day 2021, when hopefully there's a Democrat in office and there is a Democratic-led Supreme Court, there is a chance that it started pack the court. But nonetheless, they've already destroyed any so-called norms and traditions as it relates to what was settled in conduct with the Supreme Court and the president making the nomination in the Supreme Court, the Senate confirming or advising and considering, and they've destroyed the norms as it relates to any number of other things.
So, Maurice, I hear you, and I took your call actually thinking you were making the case that Democrats have done the same thing as Republicans, and I was going to say, well, the Gorsuch appointment and the Garland stealing of the seat, that really hadn't happened before. There had been Supreme Court justices blocked, but not blocked for so long that a president and a party lost entirely their opportunity to nominate. Not entirely, the seat had been stolen. But I want to ask a favor that you reconsider your hashtag. Packing the court was the phrase that was used to block Franklin Delano Roosevelt from expanding the court during the Lochner era, when the Lochner era was saying that property rights should trump small d democracy rights, that ultimately the Constitution held in it such strong, important protections for property that the people, through their duly elected legislature, could not interfere with the powers. I say rights, but I should actually say powers of that property. That was the Lochner era. That was around those were the vestiges of the Gilded Age judicial power. And packing the court was the phrase that was used to tarnish the idea of Franklin Delano Roosevelt adding seats to the court so that we could have small-D democratic results. What I am suggesting is that the court has already been packed. That if what we mean by packed is something kind of sideways, something kind of squirmy, something that's not really fair, in order to get a court that is ideologically aligned, that's happened. It happened with the Garland stealing of the seat, most obviously. It has happened with gerrymandering or gerrymandering. It has happened with winning elections without winning the popular vote. It has happened through interference in our elections. This court has been packed. You will now have, is it five? Is he, I can't remember if, and forgive me for this, I need to know this fact. I can't remember if it is, Kavanaugh will be the fourth or fifth justice who will be appointed by a president who did not win the popular vote. The court has been packed. If you're going to pick a hashtag, I would suggest it be expand. Expanding the court doesn't sound so bad. Expanding the court sounds like something somebody might do to promote democracy rather than to rig democracy, which is what's been happening.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. It's Wednesday. Hey, team, we're back. I'm Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We're going to take your calls. Today's topics include the Supreme Court, include the Trump and Putin meeting coming up, include Trump's attacks on NATO, include the overarching attacks on democracy. Let's take right now Erwin. Erwin from Missoula has been waiting patiently. Erwin, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Yes, what I wanted to say is there seems to be a lot of reasons not to want this appointee, and it's usually the last thing is mentioned is the environment. I personally think that should be the first thing, because Gorsuch and this Kavanaugh are both young people. I expect that any lawsuits by any city against an oil company or fossil fuel will go to the Supreme Court and be overturned. That's just my concern about it. There's a lot of other concerns, but I just wanted to express that.
Appreciate it, Erwin. It is right. So right now you're going to hear two primary arguments. The one you're going to hear most is about healthcare. That Obamacare, that health care for people who need health care, is under attack and will be further under attack if Brett Kavanaugh is in fact confirmed. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, because health care is a winning issue. Another, because health care is something that Joe Manchin, for instance, can take to his voters in West Virginia and say, I've got to block this guy because of health care. If he says he's doing it because of Roe versus Wade, it's harder for Joe Manchin to go to his voters and say, I, anti-abortion Democrat Joe Manchin, want to make sure we don't overturn Roe versus Wade. So you're going to hear more about health care. And it doesn't make the health care argument less accurate. It's just one of the reasons it's going to be, a couple of the reasons it's going to be focused upon. In some of the northeastern states, you're going to hear more about Roe, and you're going to hear that to put pressure on Susan Collins of Maine to vote no on Brett Kavanaugh. You might also hear about that in Alaska to put more pressure on Lisa Murkowski. But when that kind of political conversation, communication tactic is chosen, you are right that really important stuff gets missed. Really important stuff gets missed. And it includes if what you have is a view of the court that protects property against democracy, that protects wealth and power, or even just Republican ideology. When you appoint Republican operatives to the court, that is what they are likely and in fact have done. Then you miss some really important stuff. It is why I focus so much on democracy, because although it is insufficient, I believe it is darn nigh necessary to bend the arc of history, bend the arc of the moral universe towards justice. that we have to have a court that values democracy, including the rules of democracy, including how the money gets spent, making sure that it is, in fact, transparent, not just secret money, making sure the districts are, in fact, drawn not only for power advantage, but for to maximize, in fact, the will of the people. It is what we have to do to make sure there isn't suppression of the votes, understanding that democracy works better if more people do it. And, yeah, we forget about the environment. Louise has been waiting very patiently. Louise in Santa Fe, go ahead.
Hello. Oh, this has been such a great program, such great information, and now I think it's time for action. So what I did this morning is I called my senators and urged them to vote against this appointment, and they're very good senators, and they're going to already. But I also heard on Stephanie Miller's show that Senator Murkowski in Alaska is very tuned in to the amount of call volume she gets, not only from her own constituents, but from people out of state. So I called her as well. And I called Susan Collins as well. And I also called Jeff Flake, because he is a Republican who is not going to run for re-election. And I think he might want to go out in a cloud of glory of opposing this appointment. So I want to put out the number of Congress, the switchboard. You can call this number in Washington, and they will connect you to your senator or to any other senator or give you the numbers.
Yeah, go ahead and say the number.
The number is 202-225-3121. It's really time for action. We got to do something now.
It's 202-225-3121. You can also do 202-224-3121. And you said that, particularly if they're in your state. And by the way, Jeff Merkley, who is my U.S. senator, posted that he was getting calls against Kavanaugh 13-1 ratio against. And you were saying maybe even call folks outside the state. And I would add one thing to what you were saying, Louise, and that is, if you know people in Alaska, if you know people in Maine, call them, tweet them, message them, because at the very least, we should be educating more and more people that courts are important. And Louise, thank you so much for the call and the call to action. All right. Gary from Alford, Florida. I hope I pronounced Alford, Florida correctly. Gary, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Actually, the locals call it Alford.
Alford.
Yes, but it looks like Alford, though.
I had a friend, Sean Alford, back in the day. I'm going to tell her that she pronounced her name incorrectly. It's Alford.
I have a question, Jeff, and it is there any movement to stop Trump from meeting privately with Putin?
Who would be? It's an excellent question, because the private meetings also make me really, really nervous, right? The conspiratorial spidey sense that I have buzzes significantly when they say, no, I just need a half an hour without anybody else there, including my most trusted Confederates. It's just got to be me and him, because so much could happen in that time, including Putin just saying, remember money laundering, remember P-tape, remember whatever it is, whatever fantastical notion we might have. It doesn't take too much time for Putin to say, remember, you got to disrupt NATO because that's what I really need you to do. Or remember, something bad might happen to you. The challenge I have, Gary, is that I don't know who is supposed to be blocking him. I'm not sure who there is. This mythology that his own staff was going to limit him, I think it is, in fact, that just a mythology. Who do you think would have run such a movement? I like that you expose it. I like that we talk about it. But how would we actually connect the dots to see to it that that happens, other than elect somebody else to be president?
Well, I know, but we're in a dangerous time right now.
Yeah.
We don't know, first of all, with the meddling and the gerrymandering, and we don't know if there ever will be another free election. That doesn't mean we don't try.
No, nor is my question a comment to do nothing. And I actually think that, and I'll say another number. The White House comment line is 202-456-1111. I'll say it again. It's 202-456-1111. And calls to the White House comment line saying, hey, meetings with foreign powers, particularly meetings that are in dispute and on matters that are in dispute, ought to happen in the sun. There ought to be other people there. That might be at least one thing that was worth doing.
Yeah. Could it be illegal? Could there be an emergency, whatever you would call that, emergency stop to it because it's questioning the legality of him meeting alone?
And I'll go back. I'll go back to Kavanaugh. I'll go back to the Supreme Court appointment and why that matters so much. There was just a vote, an emergency vote by the Senate to say, hey, NATO's a good thing. And I think it passed 97-2. And why did they think they needed to do that? Well, because even Republicans recognize that Donald Trump's been criticizing NATO, and there seems to be a motive to that that is nefarious. Also, Congress got together and voted that to overturn Donald Trump's denial of sanctions on against Russia and said, no, the sanctions matter. Democrats and Republicans agree, sanctions matter. But Donald Trump still hasn't enforced the sanctions. The challenge is, if you have an imperial presidency, if you have a president that has no check and balance, then it doesn't even matter. Even if you're in my campaign to stop a Trump and Putin private meeting, even if we pass some law and Trump decided, nah, I'm going to enforce the law and I'm going to choose not to enforce that one. That's my definition of executive power. And if you have Brett Kavanaugh, who has written an article in the Minnesota Law Review saying, yeah, president has a lot of power and you can't really hold him accountable during his term. He can do stuff during his term. You got to wait until after his term to do anything about. Then you are right. We are in a dangerous time. Man, Gary, I worry I'm bumming people out, Gary. I'm worried I'm not, this is not being a happy show. We're making people just feeling happy about goodness, sweetness, and light. And Gary, you're part of the problem with, along with me, of making people not happier, Gary. All right.
Well, I don't know what's worse sometimes, you know, following what's going on or not following what's going on.
It's a good question. We got to follow it, though, right? But here, okay, I got an answer to that one. I got an answer to that one. To my friends who are like, oh, the news is so depressing. I better turn off. Please don't. But you can ration. Don't do it. You don't have to do it all the time. You can take social media off your phone. You just put it on your laptop or your computer so you can check it out. You can listen to shows that hopefully give you some inspiration as well as frustration. You can limit the time of day you check it out. More importantly, participate in the conversation that will help us get stronger going forward. Make sure in your own life you're finding love, you're finding joy, you're educating yourself, you're educating others. You're picking fights you can win. You're also picking a fight that you can't win but is morally responsible and necessary anyway. You're donating 10%, at least 1% of your income to things that you believe in that will institute significant, meaningful change. But also along the way, love life, celebrate democracy. Don't give up, but make sure you enjoy life as you do it. Thank you so much, Garrett, for calling. We're going to be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith. We'll be right back. We're back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith. Johnny, on Free Speech TV, you say we ought to be in crisis mode. Go ahead.
We are in crisis mode and have been steadily and increasingly since 1985. And I utterly reject calls like Maurice about this false equivalency, saying that what Republicans are doing now is justified because of what Democrats did or used to do, or reportedly did at one other time.
In fairness to Maurice,
no,
I think
justification whatsoever for the literal dismantling of the U.S. Constitution and the destruction of democracy, governance, and the rule of law. What we're seeing now is an attack on every single government agency, from education to health, medical research, law enforcement and crime statistics, consumer safety, worker safety and compensation, destruction of the internet neutrality doctrine, converting pensions, destroying pensions and converting them into privatized 401k schemes initiated by Ronald Reagan. The list is endless. And the most recent assault, if you recall this morning on Democracy Now!, did you catch this morning's Democracy Now!?
I did not. I was prepping.
Okay, well, Amy Goodman played the latest Trump assault of common sense. This morning, she aired him talking to a bunch of people in one of his golf resorts, I believe. He was talking about Venezuela. He says, We have troops all over the world, far, far away. The people in Venezuela are suffering and dying, and they're our neighbor. He wants to justify military invasion because the people in Venezuela are suffering and dying, so putting military is going to make things better. But what about the hypocrisy involved here? What about the people suffering in Appalachia? What about the people in Central America fleeing because of conditions we set up, separating their children once they get here? They're not suffering and dying?
I hear you that we are in crisis mode, and I don't disagree. And I say that as someone who doesn't really want to be in a crisis. I'd rather have some fun. How I started doing this kind of thing, how I started doing radio stuff, is in part because I like talking about happy things. There isn't as much happy stuff to talk about if we're talking about the state of our democracy, and it's not because we're overstating it. It is, in fact, a crisis mode. I think you are correct. I want to, in defense of Maurice, I actually think what Maurice was saying was reciprocity going forward, that Democrats have to be willing to play tough in response to Republicans playing tough. And it was my characterization, my anticipation of his point that you took issue with, and I think took fair issue with. And if we are in crisis mode, what does that mean? Al calling from Buffalo, New York, making the case that midterms matter. Al, go ahead.
Supreme Court, Jefferson, all branches of government are supposed to be co-equal as it was written by the Constitution. Citizens United was the biggest overreach. Now listen, by a majority of the judicial branch. Now this is really what makes people mad. Since the 1936 Supreme Court tried to dismantle FDR's New Deal. Now, the ruling from the Supreme Court enabled unlimited amounts of money from both domestic and foreign corporations to be used in our elections. Okay, now, all rancid sector of the far left, I have a problem with you folks because I don't understand what it will take for you people to get on board with the idea of incremental victories rather than basically scoffing at the
rather than all or nothing. I hear you. I hear you. We'll pick that up right after the break. This is the Tom Hartman Show. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith. On the phone with us right now, our friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Media News, talkmedianews.com, here to bring us the latest in happy, good, inspirational, positive, life-affirming news. Ellen Ratner, lift up our souls. Oh, well, Monday turns out night. She can't reply to that. Go ahead, Ellen.
All right. We had a reporter on Monday night at the Supreme Court who was asking all these protesters about Roe versus Wade. Well, some of them had never heard of it, Roe versus Wade, and one of them, after our reporter asked her about Roe versus Wade, slugged him in the back.
Wait. I mean, who did? Hold on, Ellen. Who didn't understand what Roe versus Wade was, and who slugged who in the back?
One of the protesters.
Oh.
And frankly, my view, my limited view, is that President Trump tweeting out the kinds of negativity he does encourages people to act that way.
And what were they protesting?
I really do believe that. I'm sorry?
What were they protesting?
They were protesting who the president was going to announce Kavanaugh as his new Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. Donald Trump almost certainly does exacerbate conflict feelings in the country. And conflict feelings in the country are the kind of things that can bait people into doing stuff that might or might not be strategically beneficial. That said, it doesn't surprise me that even no matter what, there is some benefit to people being energized. People need to be energized. If the only thing we do is stay asleep as democracy is eroded, that's a big deal. But I introduced you as somebody who's going to bring us life-affirming news. I'm suspecting that I missed my guess, that you are continuing to offer us spoonfuls of bummer.
A couple other life-affirming things that aren't life-affirming. One is that President Trump is going to England tomorrow. He faces a lot of hostility. There is a 20-foot blimp that is going to go over London with him as a baby. And it's very interesting. Actually, I was called by an English radio station. They want me to go up and say what America thinks about this. But Donald Trump is not. He's supposed to be in England for 4 days before he goes to his meeting with President Putin in Helsinki. I mean, it's really quite unbelievable as you think about it.
What do we know about his meetings this morning and today with NATO? For instance, his, as he is so wont to do, accusing others of the things that he has done himself and criticizing Germany for being in cahoots with Russia, which is a somewhat laughable claim.
What's interesting is that he did accuse Germany, you're absolutely right, of being in cahoots with Russia. However, then he has this meeting with Angela Merkel, who's, of course, the Chancellor of Germany, and it's all like they get along like perfectly. It makes no sense whatsoever to me.
Does it really not make sense to you? It makes total sense to me.
No, I mean, I on one hand, you know, he's saying that she's under the thumb of Russia, and the next hand, oh, they're getting along so well. I don't understand it.
I totally understand it.
For a long time.
I totally understand it, and I do think the media has been manipulated, and because it's unorthodox, it makes it seem confusing. It is not confusing to me at all. Donald Trump does not use words to tether them to some principle or something that you might consider, that I might consider the truth. He uses words to accomplish an objective, and they're unrelated to much else. So when he says that Hillary Clinton is unstable and trigger happy, it is not because that it bears some relationship to some fact. It is so it makes it a little weirder. It is the one who smelt it dealt it. It's make it weirder to claim that he is, in fact, unstable and trigger-happy. When he says the election is rigged, it is not because it's tethered to the fact that the election is rigged. It is tethered to the fact that he doesn't want to be accused of that himself. But then he has a different objective when he sits down with somebody. When he sits down with somebody, he wants to look like he can lead the nation. He wants to seem like he's a world leader. And so he looks different and sounds different. He is trying to accomplish an objective. And if all we are is cats following laser beams, we can be confused. I don't find it that confusing. I just find it deplorable.
Well, I think that you have a very interesting perspective, and perhaps I can use it later on my other radio shows, because frankly, to me, I'm like, what? I don't understand any of it, but I think your perspective is very useful. Thank you. Okay. Now, the Human Rights Campaign Fund this morning put out something that they had heard, and I don't know whether it's true or not. We're trying to find out. But, of course, everybody's in Europe, so it's hard to know whether, in fact, the Trump campaign is considering diverting money from the Ryan White money, which is, of course, for AIDS, HIV programming, so that they can afford to pay for the kids at the border and incarcerating them. Now, as you know, a federal judge yesterday said, hey, sorry, guys, you still have to meet the, I think it's a July 26th deadline, and you can't just HIV test everybody. You have to have a reason to HIV test everybody. DNA test everybody, and you have to have a reason to DNA test everybody. And then, even if you do DNA test a child and his parent, then what you need to do is you need to, or her parent, what you need to do is destroy the DNA. And, of course, this is a very tough judge's ruling. It'll go to the Ninth Circuit, which is much more liberal, and it might even go to the Supreme Court. And, of course, it depends who we have at the Supreme Court.
And so the idea being they need dough to do more investigations, and rather than diverting money from the defense budget or some other thing, they want to divert money from AIDS work, and they want to spend that money to do DNA research. And the DNA research is to what? Match up parents to their children? Is that the idea?
Well, what they're saying is that all these people are bringing in kids. They're saying they're theirs and they're not.
Right.
They have no proof of that.
Right. To say this, they want to argue these aren't really parents and children. These are just random connections that people are using as human shields to get into the country.
Right. Exactly.
Ellen Ratner, do you have a dose of good news? Anything you want to say about goats?
I don't have any good news. What can I say?
You could say something about goats.
Good news for you. Well, you can get a goat. That is good news for people in South Sudan. That's right. Goats, plural, for theoldgoat.com. That's goats for theoldgoat.com. We're the only animal group because people photograph of the recipient and the animal so they see where their money's going.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Media News. Thanks for being with us. We got to have a spoonful of sugar to help the dour medicine go down. And we appreciate you being with us.
That's right. Okay. Thanks.
This is a Tom Hartman program. I'm Jefferson Smith. What's your spoonful of sugar? We need a little bit of sugar. It could be something more healthful than sugar if you so choose. Stevia? Honey?
You're listening to Tom Hartman.